Update on a big legal tangle. After 35 years, New York State's widely criticized Rockefeller drug laws are about to be reformed. The laws give mandatory minimum sentences. They don't allow judges to take into account circumstances of the case. Journalist Jennifer Gonerman is author of the book Life on the Outside, The Prison Odyssey of Elaine Bartlett. Elaine was a mother of four, is a mother of four, who spent 16 years behind bars for selling cocaine in New York. It was her first offense. Jennifer is here to talk about the bigger legal debate. These laws, Rockefeller drug laws, were passed in 1973. There's been attempts to reform them over and over. First of all, what's the criticism of these laws?
It's just what you said, the fact that they set up a system of mandatory minimum punishments, which meant, in effect, that judges really did not have power to decide how long somebody went to prison for. It didn't matter if somebody was a drug kingpin or a drug mule. Whatever amount of drugs they were caught with, that determined their punishment. It wasn't up to the judge, so the judge couldn't, you know, send somebody to treatment if they thought that was a better option. And now I think finally legislature is going to do something about that.
So there was a reform in 2004. What did that do?
It just lessened some of the most severe sentences, but it certainly didn't tackle the heart of the Rockefeller drug laws, which are these mandatory minimum drug sentences.
And where are we now in this debate? What looks like it's going to unfold?
Well, the Assembly has just passed a bill which begins to repeal some of the most onerous aspects of the drug laws, and it looks like this year there might actually be a serious reform bill passed by both sides.
What's the impulse on mandatory minimum sentences? Is it the legislature or the people in a state deciding that they want the job that the judge has, that they're essentially usurping the bench?
You know, these laws are the oldest of their type in the country. New York was first in 1973 when they set up the system of mandatory minimums. And I always thought it was really kind of a soundbite solution to an incredibly complex social problem. Back then, none of the experts thought it was a good idea. Actually, I was looking up some old quotes last night, and at the time, Mayor Lindsay himself said that this was merely a deceptive gesture offering nothing beyond momentary satisfaction and inevitable disillusionment. And now, 36 years later, I think that's exactly what the Assembly and Senate are starting to conclude.
And we should remind people, the Rockefeller drug laws gave birth to the three strikes, you're out kind of federal impulses and some of the other mandatory minimums that have grown nationwide, right?
Yeah, they essentially established a blueprint for fighting the so-called war on drugs that was copied by every corner of the country and have essentially been the engine that have driven the prison expansion in this country over the last 30 years.
Along those lines, there's been some recent revision of the crack cocaine laws on the federal level just for people in federal prison, pretty limited in scope. There's still so many jurisdictions that haven't really addressed this. Is there a national movement to reconsider what mandatory minimums and what America's drug policy is?
There's certainly a national movement going on, and in some ways New York is a little bit behind the times. A lot of other states have already tackled their mandatory minimums and started to dismantle them. I think what a lot of states are concluding is that we simply cannot afford to keep so many people locked up. We have now more than 2 million people behind bars, and states simply can't foot the bill anymore and have, I think, come to conclude that this extraordinarily expensive experiment, crime control, simply has not worked.
But wouldn't it be equally stupid or short-sighted to just get rid of the Rockefeller drug laws without re-engaging a serious debate on alternatives to prison?
Yeah, I think what this bill that the Assembly passed really does begin to have that conversation in a much more meaningful way than we have had. And it's really about drug treatment and how does that work and how can we divert people into drug treatment and make sure they get quality treatment. I'm not exactly sure how the state plans to pay for all that in a time of fiscal crisis. But, you know, I think part of that conversation also has to be the fact that a lot of people get locked up under the drug laws are not addicts, don't need treatment, they really just need a job, you know, and so that's another part of, I hope that will be part of this conversation about what happens with these people if you're not going to lock them up for long periods of time. What are you going to give them to do?
Jennifer, one of the things that will stand out in my mind was that I went to a meeting in Oakland, a community meeting, and this woman said, I'm a mother, and I know that, you know, people of color are disproportionately locked up on these drug laws, but I don't care. I don't want my kids around crack dealers. I don't care. What do you say to someone like that?
I think that's fair enough, but I think if her kids got older, if one of them did get locked up and got some outrageously long sentence for a relatively minor crime, I think she maybe would have looked at the problem slightly differently. I mean, I think it's really the what hasn't really been conveyed in the coverage over the years. You know, people have been fighting these laws since the moment they were created. They fought them with statistics for many, many years. But the fact is that the true impact of them is incredibly difficult to convey in a short news story, in a newspaper. And the human cost of these laws has been extraordinary. The cost in human lives, to families, to entire neighborhoods, the lost years, the kids who grow up without any parents, the hours wasted in New York, at least taking 8-hour bus rides across the state to see loved ones on the weekends. You know, the gouging of poor families by phone companies for the incredible exorbitant rates for collect calls. Thousands of people are now walking around New York State with felony convictions, which are sort of like having an invisible scarlet letter, you know, making it very difficult for them to get a job, which can prohibit them from getting public housing or a student loan. And if you're still on parole here, at least, it means you can't vote. So, you know, the collateral damage of these laws has been extraordinary. I think it's something that states across the country are only really beginning to grapple with and calculate.
Well, Jennifer Gonerman, thanks so much. I mean, you have been following this for a long time.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.